I am super excited to have you back for another episode of Red Receipt. It's a deep dive into the how and why of the brands we love and the creatives behind them. From blueprints to launch day, customers as community, and the detours in between. Big lessons and easy listening. Red Receipt is hosted by Antidote, the email and SMS marketing agency by people who hate boring email. Joining us today is Jake Bullock, the founder of Drink Can, a cannabis-infused social tonic. Living in the Bay, attending school at Stanford, Jake dreamt up the idea for the company in 2018 and started it out of his garage. Since then, he's built out a brand with an explosive following and a product people love. He joins us here today on the show to talk through his journey, tapping into the cannabis market, and lessons learned about business along the way. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show.
What's your background in before launching the product and brand?
Yeah, so I had spent, I had done a bunch of different things, kind of weaved a path. Primarily the thread that connected it all was working with consumer brands. So I was an investment banker right out of college. I met my co-founder Luke at Bain & Company in San Francisco. We were both management consultants. I did some private equity investing where I spent a decent amount of time working with consumer brands and looking at investments in consumer retail. And so I always wanted to start a consumer brand. And I think that there's like a combination of being prepared mentally for that and but then also, you know, coming up with what that actually looks like in real life. And I was fortunate in some ways that I had grown up in Colorado. And so I followed their legalization process. And they were the first state to do a recreational program. And then right as I got to business school, California had approved its Adult Use Act. And that was really a sign to me to spend those 2 years of business school figuring out, you know, what would you do in the space if you were going to create a consumer brand of cannabis? And I had had a lot of ideas around it, right? Because I'd been following the process in Colorado. And, you know, the biggest thing that I couldn't get over was we spent thousands of years of human history socializing around beverage. It's just the case. And when you look at people being social, they always have something in their hand that they're drinking. And so it didn't seem to me that cannabis would fundamentally change that structure. And, you know, we'd all start eating cookies and gummy bears when we socialized, but rather that cannabis would get adopted into that existing heuristic. And so the real question was why is that not happening? Shouldn't it have happened in the California medical market? Shouldn't we be seeing it in Colorado and some of these other places that were early movers? And what we found was that, you know, dosing was off. So the beverage products that were out there were 10, 25, 40, 100 milligrams of THC in a beverage, which just made no sense to us.
That is insane.
It's wild. It's absolutely wild. The joke that we would tell is it's almost like we're trying to sell light beer to a bunch of people at the end of Prohibition in speakeasies. And it's like, no, the people in the speakeasies don't want light beer. They're going to keep drinking liquor. But that's not the opportunity. The opportunity at the end of Prohibition and alcohol was light beer. It was wine. Or a mixed cocktail, right? And so that was really the way we thought about dosing, is how many can you have over the course of one setting? And that number is not one, right? It's got to be more than that. And for people, it's different. And so give them the flexibility and the control with your product to find how many they can have in one setting. And then the other big thing is more of a science challenge, which we found. You know, we talked about this a little bit, but cannabis starts out as an oil, the THC and CBD that we use in our product. And so how do you get that into a liquid, into water, and in such a way that it stays there and it's the same amount, it's fully dispersed through liquid, is essentially solvent. And so that's a real tricky challenge that a lot of the early beverages struggled with. And so you'd have sort of these oily slicks on the top of the beverage, or you'd have some sediment or particulate that would come out of solution. And often you'd have really grassy sort of cannabis taste, that like funky smell that you get from cannabis. And, I don't, you know, it's a totally different world and smokers will often, talk to me about, you know, appreciating the various nuances in that smell. Beverage drinkers don't want to taste it, right? People putting this into their bodies, you know, via food or beverage, do not want that flavor. And so, you know, how do you create a product that doesn't have any cannabis taste? And actually, it's an interesting innovative beverage that you might see, you know, on the shelves of Whole Foods today, and not something that you might have found, you know, in a gas station in the 90s. And it's not so much that I think people are designing products like with the gas station in the 90s in mind. It's more that they're trying to mask this flavor. And so the way you do that is you add a lot of acid, a lot of lemon juice, maybe it's a lemonade, maybe you add a ton of sugar, then it, all of a sudden you've got something that's like 150 calories and tastes really sugary sweet, you know, as a way to sort of mask that canvas flavor. We went in the opposite direction. We thought that people, you know, wanted something natural. They wanted ingredients that they recognize. We have 5 ingredients in our product. We use agave nectar as the sweetener. We only use a little bit of it, right? Our products are 30 or 35 calories. And it's real. There's no sugar substitutes. There's no artificial sugar or sweeteners in there. And that has a really big impact on the taste. And we were able to do that because we were able to, you know, develop cannabis emulsion technology that fit with our product, that didn't have any grassy cannabis taste, that was fully dispersed. You know, you have one can, it's going to be the same experience today as it will be in 6 months as it was if you switch from our lemon lavender flavor to our grapefruit rosemary flavor.
And so when you guys were developing the product and also the brand, like, what was the process like before launch? Did you bring on experts? Did you raise money before launching in order to find the expertise that you needed to develop the product? Or was that something that you guys were working on between you and your partner?
Right. Yeah. So we actually did a lot of almost all of the formulation work before we raised any money. So, you know, from a business perspective, there were like 3 questions we had to go out and answer. We were trying to figure out, you know, can we actually make this product, right? Is there a way to do it in a way that doesn't require us to build a manufacturing facility, which was big for us because we didn't really have beverage manufacturing expertise. And that's since changed. We've learned everything we need to know about it over the last 2 years. But initially, we didn't want to have to put up capital for that. We wanted to know that we could actually make something that tasted delicious, right? That the formulation was possible because everything we had tried up until this point missed the mark on one dimension or the other. And so we wanted to make sure we could do that. And we wanted to make sure that there was appetite, you know, from outside money, because we knew eventually in order to scale a business like ours, you know, requires a lot of working capital. You know, we were often producing the product weeks, if not months in advance of it ever being sold to a consumer. And so, you know, that creates a dynamic that requires you to sort of build inventory and fund that with real dollars. And so we actually set out to do I'd started working on formulation when I was at business school at Stanford. We, you know, had a whole setup in my garage of kegs and carbonation. We'd force carbonate the kegs. We'd pump them into these brown bottles, sort of like a traditional beer bottle, cap them, set up these 6-packs that we'd send off to students. And we'd ask them a bunch of questions, you know, afterwards, what they liked about the taste, what they liked about the dosing, the effect, how many did they have? Did they share it? A million different questions. That sort of provided the foundation for how we thought about what this product needed to be. We learned that, you know, we thought 2 was the right milligrams of THC in the product. We learned that people wanted natural ingredients, that they were okay with the product being, you know, not 0 calories. They were okay with 30 calories if it meant that it tasted great and, you know, felt like a treat and didn't put anything fake in. And so those were really important learnings. And then we actually did the formulation work before we raised any money with a food scientist and, you know, 20 plus years of experience formulating food and beverage, and basically taught us how to set up a food science lab and to play around with flavors. And there's big differences. I mean, it was an incredible experience, whether you put in 5 drops of lavender flavor or 6, totally changed the profile of the beverage. And so we really focused on balance. We focused on taking the, you know, interesting citrus fruit that you would know that would be approachable and marrying that with an herbal flavor that maybe was a little bit more adventurous. So we spent a lot of time with those pairings. And we wanted to create a product that was distinctly unique to cannabis. So this is not, you know, X, but with cannabis added, right? And a lot of folks are you know, trying to replicate, whether it's alcohol or some other product that's out there that they add cannabis to the cold brew coffee. For us, it was like, we are trying to create a new category that will be innovative in and of itself. And in doing that, we thought a lot about, you know, what do people want to drink? Like, what are the flavor profiles that are interesting? And we centered around something that was very adult and savory, and not so much, you know, sugary and sweet. And I think that that's served us well. And once we sort of started going through this process of formulating these products and tasting them, we realized that there was something really special in what we had cracked from a formula standpoint. And then it all became, how do we go sell that to investors to raise the capital that we needed to raise? And so that was kind of the sequencing of how we approached it.
So then you guys were working on the formula, testing the formula with students and just people in the community that you guys knew. And then once you guys felt like you had come to a product that you felt like people would really love and enjoy, that's when you then went to the next step of kind of going out and raising in order to build the business.
Exactly. I think, you know, from our perspective, we did a little bit of work on, you know, can you make this product, you know, can you formulate a product that people actually want, right? That consumers are actually saying, you have to make this. Are you going to start this company, right? That was like one of the things burned into my brain is hearing consumers that we had prototyped the product with, you know, come to me and to Luke and be like, you guys have to, you're doing this, right? Like, you have to make this product. Like, I need to buy this.
That's awesome.
And that was really powerful, I think, to us to know, okay, let's do this. And then, you know, there's always the obvious question of, you know, are there investor partners that can come in and see that same value and want to go on that journey with you? And we were fortunate enough to find that. And, at that point we were, that was all the easy part. And then the hard part begins.
And you guys, are a very relatively new brand and company. It seems like from an outside perspective, you've gained some pretty powerful distribution channels already. Like, what would you kind of attribute that to? Or how did you guys go about launching the brand in order to gain that distribution from the jump?
Yeah, so the way we thought about it early on, I think there's a couple of things at work that have contributed to, you know, having, we really just launched this brand in June of last year. So it hasn't even been already a full year on the market. We've obviously been working on it for longer than that. But, I think the things that really contributed to, early traction is one, we had a great product. And I think that, you know, had we not spent that upfront work with consumers, with prototypes, doing the formulation, making tweaks, going back to consumers, and really listening right to them and what they were saying, I think we would have been in a different box. I think we were also really helped by the fact that this is a new category, and so in some ways it's difficult, right? Because that sales conversation is not doesn't always start off on the right foot because people are suspect of beverage. They maybe purchased beverages before for their stores that haven't sold as well as they wanted them to, or as was promised. You know, they may not even have a refrigerator in the store. Our product doesn't need to be refrigerated, but you know, you want to drink it cold, and there's something about grabbing a six pack of cold beverage out of a fridge that really sells the product in a store. And so you had to deal with questions around that. We were fortunate in the sense that there aren't a ton of beverages out there. And a lot of the beverages that are out there aren't really competing for the same customer that we are, right? So if you talked about your 25 milligram cookie, you know, there are 10 milligram beverages all the way up to 100 that are on the shelves. And those are just a totally different customer, right? It's a medical patient. It's somebody that has a really, really high cannabis tolerance, you know, from high cannabis use, where our customer is somebody that's coming in and is more interested in maybe those chocolate covered blueberries, or, you know, 2.5 milligram mints. They've had that bad experience. And so we can kind of sell our distribution partners on that vision of, you know, at the end of the day, the person that's coming into the dispensary today and really driving sales, that power user, you know, is not our customer. And so that makes it tough. But if you're thinking long-term about how you grow the category, about how you move kind of to a more inclusive retail environment that's not just the person that's coming in to buy 100 milligram edibles or, you know, flower and concentrate in high potent strains, that you really need that new customer, right? That's the person that's coming in that's never been to your store. And they're going to bring three friends, and then they're going to talk about our product. And they're going to share our six packs with three more friends. They're going to tell you where they got it, and they're going to come back in. And we can show that with data, right? It's kind of cool, the impact we've been able to have in bringing new people sort of from that big blue ocean out there that would otherwise have been drinking alcohol, right, on a social night, or bringing a bottle of wine to a housewarming party. They're going into a dispensary and they're picking up a six pack of can, and they're taking it to the party and set. And I think that selling folks on that was really powerful. We fully expect that there'll be more brands like us that will pop up. But we were able to get there first. And in some ways that made the sales and distribution conversations go a lot easier.
It's interesting too, because in one way you guys have the advantage that it is a new product and it is a new category. But on the other hand, like, I know that the challenge could be the education aspect of it. And even the fact that when I went into a MedMen location, that the person working on the floor was educated enough to teach me about the product, it kind of surprised me in a way,
right?
Because I thought, like, wow, you guys have either done amazing education with these retail partners that you have. And I'm kind of curious, like, how have you thought about that aspect of things? And then even being in person and doing the education from your team to then consumer.
Right. No, I mean, it's great to hear that, because that's exactly how it should work, right? And the way we draw it up on paper is that you have something like that, where a customer comes in, you know, goes to the retail associate in the store and talks to them about a product, and they're able to provide that education, you know, just as we would have. And so that's like a great success story of how it works. I think the reality on the ground is it's really, really hard. Because you've got, you know, thousands and thousands of these bud tenders and dispensaries all over the state. And how do you reach it? You can't, you know, it's impossible to reach every single one of them. But the way we like to think about it is, when we open a new door, we want to handle that door with care, which means we want to get samples, not just one can, right? But a six pack, like we intend our consumer to purchase and consume the product to all the dispensary staff members. So they can go take that six pack home and they can drink it just like we would expect our customer to, and they can have that experience. That's really, really important to us. We love to go in and do demos. We're kind of on hold with those now, given the current climate around COVID-19. But before, we were doing demos, I mean, 20, 30, 40 demos a month across of all of our stores. And we would sample the product. We had sample cups, and we have virgin versions, which have no cannabis added. And so we can taste the flavor. We can have a conversation about the product, what the effect will be like when you purchase the dosed real product. That really matters, right? Because there's all sorts of questions, right? People come to us saying, one, like, what even is this? Will 2 milligrams get me high? Is one variety? Some people say, how many of these can I have? I don't want to get too high. You know, all these interesting questions that really, really are important. I mean, does it hit me differently? How do you compare it to if I smoke from a vape, or how do you compare it to one of the 2.5 milligram mints? And so having, you know, us, you know, primarily in the early days, it was Luke and myself in our pink sweatshirts, in all these stores, talking to customers and telling them. And what's great about that is the bud tenders are around and they hear you, and you can kind of talk to them about it as well. And it creates a halo effect around the product, where if you hear it enough times, if you repeat it to consumers enough times, they start repeating it back to you. And then the retail associates understand it as well. And it kind of creates this whole network of, okay, got it. I get what can is. Can's cannabis in a can. It is the potency of a light beer. Bring it to parties. You don't have hangovers the next day. It's a third of the calories of alcohol, and it tastes absolutely delicious, right? And you sort of get that wrapped down. And that I think has really helped. We put up a bunch of information on our website. We try to do education through our Instagram as well, and kind of increasing the reach. But it is, we found what you're able to do in store with bud tenders, with consumers, is the most valuable time that we can spend.
And touching on, obviously, the current state of things right now, how has your business been affected by the whole COVID-19 breakout? And and then shutdowns.
Right, right. Well, we're fortunate in California that, I think rightfully so, cannabis has been deemed an essential business. And so the vast majority of dispensaries remain open. They're being really smart and careful by doing sort of curbside pickups only, or delivery only, or having, you know, one or two people only in the store at once, which is great. And it allows folks that, you know, need to be in dispensaries on a regular basis, getting medicine, getting, you know, all of the cannabis products that they've come to rely on, right, from a wellness standpoint, when they need it, which is great. We've obviously stopped all demos, so we aren't doing the samplings in store, which is, we think is you know, the right thing to do. And we want to make sure that we're keeping all of our team members really safe. But what we've been able to do is deploy that team, towards delivery. So there are tons of fantastic delivery services in California operating, you know, in different parts of the state. And so we're working with them, and having our team members, address what has been sort of an outpouring of inbounds we've gotten from consumers being like, where can I get this product? Are you guys still open? I need can. you know, everyone is sort of retreated to their quarantine positions, and I think are getting tired of drinking wine every night or whatever their alcohol beverage of choice is. And they're looking for a different social experience, looking to mix it up, trying to keep their immune system strong. We've been able to sort of divert a lot of our resources and time away from, you know, the in-store demos, which we're not doing anymore, and towards actually helping our customer, sort of shepherding them through the delivery process. A lot of the retailers, a lot of the dispensaries have delivery as services as well, which it's great to be able to take advantage of those. And we're seeing really, really positive, you know, some of the best numbers we've seen out of delivery since the company started. So it's great to see that the demand of the product is still strong. And we're hoping that this is a real opportunity for folks, you know, with no bars and no restaurants open in California, to just rethink the way they think about being social. Like, what does that mean? You know, do you really need alcohol and a bar and a restaurant in order to do that? Or, you know, if you're quarantined with your family or with a couple of friends, you know, what would trying a six pack of can be like? And how do you feel? And then how do you feel the next day, right? Which is so important. So we're really excited to see the number of new customers increase as well. And we're hoping that it's an opportunity for folks to try this product and sort of reevaluate from a wellness standpoint, from a social standpoint, you know, if can, you know, fits in their lifestyle.
And for somewhat selfish reasons, I'm curious, like, how you think about cannabis in general and consumption comparatively to alcohol or any other substance. Like, how often do you personally use it? You know, like, what are the benefits or pros and cons comparatively to something like alcohol?
Yeah, well, I can tell you my personal experience with it, and I think you know, a lot of folks will say they've had similar ones, but you know, we sort of grow up in this environment where alcohol is the dominant, you know, mild intoxicant of choice, and you learn how to use it by watching, you know, adults when you're a kid and how they consume and the do's and don'ts, and then you learn yourself and you experiment a little bit and you kind of build up this repertoire of lessons around alcohol consumption and how it works for you. And I think for me, over time, it became so clear that it, you know, using alcohol primarily as a social intoxicant was just not working, right? It your hangovers get worse as you get older. I've been learning over the last few years, like, very acutely, which is just unsustainable. And, you know, it has a real impact on, for me, you know, one of the things I love to be able to do is be physically active. And that is something that runs counter to, you know, heavy alcohol use. And so, you know, there's this baseline level of frustration I almost feel now. Like, I can't have it all. I'm having to either sacrifice, you know, doing something social with friends or family in the evening and waking up and working out in the morning, which is what I want to do, or going on a bike ride or for a run. And that sort of tension, which is both a physical one, right, but also it's an emotional one. It's the regret, that whether it's the FOMO you feel from missing a social event, or the regret you feel for not being able to get up physically and exercise, that just wasn't really working for me. And I think, you know, having products like can, where, you know, you use a different intoxicant, you still get that same social lubricant, that same energy, out of it. But you know, you're not drinking as many calories. The ingredients you're putting in your body aren't, you know, poisoning your liver, and you feel great the next day. And I think that that's been so, so transformative for me. Now, is it say I'm going to totally give up alcohol? Probably not. And I think the way that, that a lot of our highest experience customers, you know, consume can is a little of both, right? They'll have a couple cans to start off their evening. Maybe then, you know, they'll go out to a bar, obviously not right now, but they did, and they would have a couple drinks. Maybe it's half the amount of alcohol they would have otherwise drank. So that's great. And then they go home and have the best night of sleep they'd had following drinking, and wake up feeling great in the morning. And so that's kind of the dream scenario. It's played out in my life. I know a lot of our team members talk about it, and we hear from consumers all the time that just, you know, just drinking 20% less alcohol is a great thing. And that's kind of how we think about it as well. Giving people another option, another social beverage that they can choose, you know, that isn't sparkling water, right? Or that isn't a Red Bull.
And I'd imagine that you guys, just hearing you talk through like going out to a bar, it's probably, first off, are you guys nationwide right now? Or you can't obviously be based on the legal situation from state to state.
Right, exactly. So you can't go across state lines with the product. So, you know, we are currently available all throughout California, and we're in process of opening a handful of new states this year. But each of those new states will have to, you know, manufacture the product in that state.
It will
stay in the state. So it makes it a lot harder, you know, compared to regular CPG food and beverage in terms of growing. But in some ways, what it does is it allows us to be really intentional and take our time and make sure we're opening the right markets and we're supporting them. So for a small company like us, I think it's going to work out just fine.
Yeah, I feel like that could be another advantage for you guys, because it sounds like you've really taken the time and energy to cultivate amazing relationships in California, which most beverage brands probably would not have the resources to do if they were launching in multiple states and or nationwide at once.
Right. And those are the brands that consumers ultimately love, right? The brands that that grow organically, that feel homegrown, that spend time in the community, that, you know, do the events, are available for those conversations. I think that that can so quickly get lost now in this world where everything goes viral and blows up, and all of a sudden, you know, you have millions and millions of dollars of sales, but you actually have no idea who your customer is, or you're not listening to them, or you don't have that communication, that authenticity that we really strive for.
And speaking kind of to that same note, is a question that I have is more like, how do you balance then? Because obviously you guys are looking to grow and have brought on outside funding. How do you balance that with really cultivating the level of intention that it sounds like you guys have when speaking to consumers and doing marketing in general?
Yeah. So we think about it all the time. I think it's, you know, it starts with understanding who your consumer is. And, you know, we had hypotheses around that when we launched the product, and, you know, we're very glad to be proven wrong here and there. And we reassess and learn and listen and try to figure out, you know, who actually is our customer. What are those different pockets look like? And, you know, what is it about the product that appeals to them? It's different often for different segments of our customer base. And then you think about, you know, how is the way that I communicate to them different? And often it's not right for the first three sentences. It's the next two or three sentences where it changes. And so you kind of think about what those messages are. And then you think about, you know, what are the right channels to have that conversation. And I think that that's going to be true wherever we go. And what's great about California is it's such a unique, diverse, massive state and market. And so we've been able to have all of that nuance, all of those different segments, have those conversations in such a way that we know kind of now if we go into new states and other parts of the country, you know, what that baseline is and how we can think about it as it compares to that baseline. What's cool about our product is, and it's a little scary as well, because, you know, all the marketing experts tell you, when you segment your customer base and don't try to be all things to everyone, that's like a recipe for failure. And so we feel this tension of we really want to understand, like, what is it that drives purchase and satisfaction across all these all these segments. But at the same time, you know, if you think about alcohol and how alcohol is consumed, you know, all of these brands would tell you they have, you know, core segment and they have some other segments that they think about, but there's real intergenerational appeal, in alcohol. There's, you know, there's, it tends to cut across all of these traditional demographics that we think about when we categorize brands. And so what we push ourselves to do is to sort of not think about those demographic characteristics, but really get to the more relevant, more meaningful psychographics that underlie it. And so we think a lot about, you know, what's your relationship to alcohol? Like, how well is it serving you, as a starting point to think about, you know, where, how our customer fits in, right? We have some folks that are like me that are very conflicted about it and are frustrated and say, you know, I can't do the things that I want to do and also drink alcohol, drinking alcohol is a prerequisite for some of the things I want to do. And how do I resolve that? Right. And that's not just, you know, people like me and my age group, it cuts across, right. And we see that with my parents and there's some of their frustration, as sort of, you know, their health is changing and trying to drink less alcohol, but their social lives are built around alcohol. And so that is really interesting in how that cuts. But then you also have people that, you know, from a dietary standpoint, can't drink alcohol, right? And they've been sort of shut out of socializing for so long because they just physically cannot go out and drink a glass of wine or have a beer. And so how does can bring them back into the fold? How does it open up conversation, social conversation in a way that they've never seen it before? That's really powerful. And then we have customers that are like, great, another form of buzz, like, let me add it to the list. Like, I'm just going to mix this in. And that's good too, right? And that happens in you know, in a lot of different age groups and cuts across demographics. And so I think that it's, in some ways, it's been a challenge having a product that has such wide appeal because we have to really dig deep to understand what's driving the appeal. But it's also been really fun because it allows us to think about these things and it's a brand new category and we're sort of the first microdose product that's got cannabis in a can. And so we're excited about that as well.
Yeah. And another interesting thing is like the fact that you guys, and I could be wrong in this sense, not knowing a ton about the cannabis industry, especially in the beverage space, but just assuming that you guys are mainly selling to consumers through the retail and distribution outlets that you have, how do you guys think about communicating directly with consumers, and what channels do you guys focus on to really capture new audiences within a direct communication line?
Yeah, definitely. So it's something we struggle with. So part of our business is obviously through dispensaries, and also through delivery. And so you get varying degrees of customer contact through both of those channels. You know, we're often frustrated by the fact that through the dispensary, we don't actually know that customer as well. But there's all sorts of tools available to us, right? We have a concierge text message service, which is fantastic. It's on our website, it's on our Instagram as well, and you can text a real person, one of our team members, who will answer any question you have about finding the product, product information, promotions, all sorts of things. And that's a great way to invite the customer to come talk to us and for us to communicate back to them. We have a highly, highly engaged Instagram following. It's you know, some folks have taken a look at this in the industry and have rated us the number one in most engaged Instagram brand in cannabis in the country. And that's by intention. I mean, we spend a ton of time thinking about how to drive engagement, how to produce content that's interesting to our followers, that you know, doesn't take ourselves too seriously, that communicates relevant product information. That kind of brings them along for the journey. There's so many folks that follow us that are just really interested in the brand and what we're doing. And so we have a conversation that way. We get thousands of DMs from folks on Instagram. And we respond to them and we you know, often they're directing folks to places to find the product. Sometimes they're asking questions. It's a great way of having conversation. And then we do a bunch of other things, right? We survey our customers you know, as regularly as we can. We have frequent emails where we'll be able to update folks on information or campaigns that we're running and have conversations that way. And then in store, right? So we talked a little bit about the demos back when we were doing them before coronavirus. But those conversations are the best, right? They're often folks will come in and spend 5, 10, 15 minutes with us just talking about the product and trying the virgin versions of all of our three flavors. And, you know, we learn a ton from that as well.
I feel like you guys have alcohol in general, like you were talking about the different consumer profiles or types. I feel like it's actually a deeper, more general human psychographic of just wanting some relief or relaxation in some form, that you guys are serving the same need. Definitely sounds more challenging in a way to kind of identify who is going to be those early adopters for you. But on the other hand, it seems like you guys have so many avenues to grow. Like you talking through even drinking at a bar made me think like you guys have to be probably thinking about or hoping that the laws around drinks being sold in bars could possibly change or update one day. Like, what are some bigger opportunities these days that you're excited about or things that you have coming up that you're excited about for the brand?
Yeah, we have all sorts of exciting stuff. I mean, on the bars, we think about that all the time. And it's really, you know, in some ways it's not up to us, and we're a small brand, and so we don't have a ton of capacity to go sort of, you know, create that new vision of the future. But, you know, we talk a lot about the fact that consumers really want more options socially. They want to be able to drink something that's not alcohol. And we think that bodes well for there to be change on that front going forward. And the reality is we are creating a really, really safe product. It is, you know, 2 milligrams of THC in each can. That's compared to 5, 10, 25, 40, 100, right, in a lot of these other products. You know, we should be thought of differently than those products. It's really, you know, if you're going to see a world where bars and restaurants can serve cannabis products, they're going to have to be serving the safest versions. Just like we said, you know, when you drink an alcoholic beverage, you're drinking a microdose of alcohol, right? And so we hope that, you know, in the future, cannabis regulators, and as this rolls out in more and more states, we'll start thinking about microdose products separately from you know, more medical products or higher potency products, because they're really different and how you might consume them and where you might consume them. And so, you know, that's one thing that we think will definitely take time. It's down the road, but it's on the horizon. And I don't know a single bar or restaurant owner that wouldn't prefer to have more of their consumers consuming cannabis over alcohol. And so, you know, that bodes well as well. I think, you know, the company as a whole are really, really excited about. We just launched ginger lemongrass as our first seasonal flavor. We've got a ton of really exciting formulations that we're looking forward to sharing kind of on a seasonal basis over time with our consumers. The response to the ginger lemongrass has been amazing. So we're really excited about continuing to share some of these great flavors that we've created with folks over time. Mm-hmm. And we're always thinking about product innovation. I think one of the things that we loved about our first versions is they seemed really unique and innovative. And so as we introduce new products that'll be beverages, you know, we believe really strongly that we are a social beverage company, and that's the world in which we want to play. But there's all sorts of cool opportunities to create innovative products in the beverage space, you know, as part of that response to listening to our customers. So we're excited to have more stuff in the pipeline this year. We're going to open a bunch of new states this year and into next year. So, you know, hopefully folks that you know, live outside of California can keep an eye out for us, and we'll be coming soon.
And with opening new states, how are you guys thinking about the structure of the team? Will you guys have kind of more localized teams in the states that you're launching?
I think we'll try to. I think, you know, one of the things we've learned in California is being in person, showing up face to face, really matters. And there's so many unique parts of this industry, and you know, one location is vastly different from another. And it's not the case that we're talking about, you know, mass distribution on the scale of alcohol. And so you can actually imagine sort of wrapping your head with a team, but a small team around, you know, each new market. California is kind of unique. We almost think about it as two markets, and we handled opening NorCal with people on the ground. And I think that worked really well for us. So I think it will be our plan going forward to have a team, even if a small team, in each of these markets, right? Because there's so much work that needs to be done in person.
And I guess the kind of one of the last questions I have is really more around like the podcast in general is to build a community of founders for clients that we work with, and then also kind of people that are looking to launch brands for them to get different perspectives on how you've approached marketing in general, but also just brand building from the ground up. And I'm curious, you're in such an interesting industry and space where there's obviously tons of kind of unknown challenges when launching something like this. Like, how have you approached dealing with the challenges? And would you have any advice for yourself looking back kind of at the time when you were working on the brand originally?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. In the early days when I was sort of thinking about whether to even do this, right? And as we were formulating the product, we're thinking through those key questions of sort of what would you need to believe in order to go do this? Yeah, it's so funny looking back, because it's like, you know, we took a very structured, rigorous approach to thinking through that and the analysis we did. And in some ways, it didn't matter, right? It all comes down to sort of the momentum and the feel in those early days. Like, how does this feel on me? Like, do I like the work that I'm doing? When I wake up every morning to, you know, think about flavor combinations and to think about how do I find a, you know, aluminum can that makes sense for what this product kind of requires. Those types of things, if you're enjoying it, if you feel that energy behind it, that was probably the more important question that we should have been asking, not so much these more technical, rigorous ones that we sort of used almost as like epiphenomenally to kind of get us comfortable with what really was a question about, like, you know, can you get over your own fears? And can you be comfortable, you know, sort of living in your parents' basement for 6 months, you know, making zero money before doing this? And like those were the more interesting, I think, questions. And looking back, I think, you know, that was ultimately the hardest part, was deciding to do it. Once we got the ball rolling, and once you were in it, all these things come naturally. You know, you'll figure out marketing because you've got a product that you believe in, and you're going to talk to your consumer, and you're going to listen to them, and you're going to then connect those dots. And you'll go figure that stuff out. You'll figure out what the right branding is. You'll figure out, you know, who the right partners are. You may get it wrong a couple of times, right? But all of those things kind of once you set the ball in motion, sort of flow naturally. Almost, it doesn't feel like it in the moment, but looking back, it sort of does. Luke and I always talk about how we have this emergent strategy. You know, looking back, it feels really strategic, and we can kind of connect the dots and be like, oh yeah, this is why we did all the things we did. But in the moment, that wasn't really the case, right? We were just putting one foot in front of the other, and that's what we still do today to get through each of these things. And we were guided by the fact that, like, from those early days, we had real energy and momentum. We believed, one, this product needs to exist, and two, we knew from inside of our heads, like, what it needed to look like. And I think that's such a powerful thing, because you'll come across all sorts of different people, partners, employees that will have different ideas. Some of them are really good ideas, but if they don't fit with that core idea of where you think this product needs to be and what it looks like, you have to have the conviction to sort of say no. And so that would be the advice that I would give, is really just sort of take a few minutes and just see, you know, how does this feel on me? And if it feels good, then do it. And the other stuff will fall into place.
It's funny because it's almost like the opposite advice that you would get while in business school. I would assume like that you should do all of the technical and analysis of the market. And in a way, your advice makes so much sense to me, knowing how it is running a business day to day. It's like you should really follow your gut instinct about things. Obviously, you need to make sure that the market aligns, but you're going to be doing this thing day in and day out. So if it doesn't feel good or feel right, there's no chance that you're going to put the creative energy into something that's needed to get it to that next level.
Yep. Yeah, I 100% agree.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and spending the time to talk with me today.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Red receipt.